This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. If one listens to an introduction audio on the Institute and also view the About page, information is available about the Institute, which includes the purpose, the founders, and the website. Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science in 1866 and wrote the first textbook in 1875. From 1875 until 1910, there were a total of 432 editions published, and when quotations will be made from the textbook, it will be from the final authorized edition of 1910. On page 146 of the textbook is the following text. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, this is stated, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. And from pages 330 to 340 are 32 specific topics, one on each of the 32 planks. And she states here, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood, therefore, it is very clear that all 32 elements must be understood, otherwise the platform is not complete, because it is stated with a singular verb, stating clearly that it is a unit of one. The unity provides the infallibility. We are providing prayer treatments on each of the 32 planks, and this prayer treatment is focusing on plank number 25, and the title to this particular plank is Man Reflects the Perfect God. The text will be read in prose format, and then each key point will be stated, followed by any extemporaneous thoughts that come to the surface related to the original text. The title, Man Reflects the Perfect God. God is individual and personal in a scientific sense, but not in any anthropomorphic sense. Therefore, man reflecting God cannot lose his individuality, but as material sensation or a soul in the body, blind mortals do lose sight of spiritual individuality. Material personality is not realism. It is not the reflection or likeness of spirit, the perfect God. Sensationalism is not bliss, but bondage. For true happiness, man must harmonize with his principle, divine love. The Son must be in accord with the Father, in conformity with Christ. According to divine science, man is in a degree as perfect as the mind that forms him. The truth of being makes man harmonious and immortal, while error is mortal and discordant. That's the end of the original text in prose format. Here is the same original text in a numbered list with any thoughts that evolve at the end of each key point. Key point number one, God is individual and personal in a scientific sense, but not in any anthropomorphic sense. Mary Baker Eddy defines God on page 465, which is chapter 14 recapitulation, which is a summary of the first 13 chapters, with the following text. What is God? God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On page 587, she defines God as the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. And she defines good on that same page as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. There doesn't appear to be a single significant term in the entire English language that has been left out, that is not covered with these three definitions of exactly what is God, and not a single clue that God is something other than spirit. Being incorporeal is the opposite of anthropomorphic. And everything about these definitions are scientific. They are certainly not expressing any degree of a personality which really stems from materialism. And this is the very first term that she covers in this plank, is God. Because if man reflects the perfect God, which is the topic of this plank number 25, the first thing we have to do is define God. What is it that man reflects? What are the qualities that are reflected by man if man is reflecting God? Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27 includes this text. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. That last phrase was from verse 31. Spirit is defined as flawless, transparent, and therefore reflective. And the only substance that exists is defined as being spirit. Since it states that man reflects perfect God, we have to do what it says in verse 26, and let us make man in our image and likeness. If we're going to let God be our guide in our every thought, speech, and action so that we are reflecting God, we better stay on our toes, because God has been defined in all of those terms that have been recited, and those terms refer to thousands of other terms that are in the English language. All of them, perfect, spiritual, and without any sense of materiality, and therefore without any sense of personality. Forget emotion, any kind of individual personal sense that is less than God, less than perfection, less than spiritual. There's no room for an accident. God is defined as all action, and He's defined as principle. Principle is harmonious, self-operating, and everything in balance. Accident is the opposite. It is chaos, conflict, out of balance, and discordant. If we think about what has been said so far in this prayer treatment, anytime we see something that is not in accordance with what has been said here, which has been stating the truth from the textbook and the Bible, then we have very valid reasons to totally refute anything that is in conflict with the harmony and balance of principle and the perfection, the flawless nature of spirit, and everything else about God. That is what is true. God is real, and anything unlike God is unreal. So if we are going to be reflecting the perfect God, as it states in the title, we need to stay on our toes and make sure that that's exactly what we're reflecting, and that we're not letting any thought into our consciousness that is in conflict with what is stated here as reality. If we want to know what qualities we should be reflecting and how we should be reflecting them, check out Recapitulation, page 475, and here is just the first couple of short paragraphs, because it is 2 pages long, and it's on the website, down at the bottom of the home page, under the title, Definitions, Man, Reality versus Unreality. And starting on page 475, it states the following. And this is an answer to the question, because the recapitulation chapter is in question and answer format, 24 questions and answers. And this is the question on what is man? And then the subtopic is fleshly factors unreal. Man is not matter. He is not made up of brain, blood, bones, and other material elements. The scriptures inform us that man is made in the image and likeness of God. Matter is not that likeness. The likeness of spirit cannot be so unlike spirit. Man is spiritual and perfect, and because he is spiritual and perfect, he must be so understood in Christian Science. Man is idea, the image of love, and that's a capital L meaning God. He is not physique. And in the glossary, which is the part of the textbook which is termed Key to the Scriptures, she defines man as follows: the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Very, very comprehensive statements about man. And this whole section, right near the bottom of the home page, is on, as I mentioned, reality versus unreality in defining man. And there's a show-all button on what is man from recapitulation, because that's 3 pages long. And we're just showing the first couple of paragraphs. Also in the same paragraph is the unreality view of man. And that is a mortal, not man. Whoever is incompetent to explain soul would be wise not to undertake the explanation of body. Life is, always has been, and ever will be, independent of matter. For life is God, and man is the idea of God, not formed materially, but spiritually, and not subject to decay and dust. The psalmist said, "Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet." That's a quote from Science and Health, page 200, under the chapter 7, which is entitled Physiology. So this is the medical view of man, made up of brain, blood, bones, and other material elements, which is what was read previously. So we're not fleshly factors. That is the false view. If Jesus would have defined man as material with fleshly factors of blood, bones, and all that kind of stuff, do you think it would be possible for him to heal anyone? He did exactly what we're teaching in these prayer treatments, because the prayer treatments are using him as our way shower. And we're utilizing the science as discovered and taught by Mary Baker Eddy in order to determine how did Jesus have healings for all those people. Very simple. Very simple to say. To do it, we need to actually transform our consciousness from one that may have compounded evil over the centuries and thousands of years that it has been promoted as being our real heritage. But what does it say in Genesis chapter 2 before it starts talking about the evil materialistic heritage that they claim man is? In other words, our DNA, the one that is born as a sinner. Well, verse 6 of chapter 2 tells it all. In one verse, "And there went up a mist." And then it tells the story of Adam and Eve. Supposedly, our heritage. But if there went up a mist, how in the world could anyone see clearly the truth? That's why the hand of God was used in placing Genesis chapter 1 before Genesis chapter 2, when in fact in chronological order, historical records show that chapter 2 was written before chapter 1. So we had to elevate thought out of what the materialistic history was trying to teach into the enlightenment of the true record of man as spiritual, not material. Point number two. Therefore, man reflecting God cannot lose his individuality. Referring to what we just read, there is nothing about man that is material. Nothing. How could there be? There was nothing about God that is material. And yet God is individual in a scientific sense, not in a materialistic sense. God is not anthropomorphic, because God is spirit. And therefore, man is not anthropomorphic. Man is spiritual, reflecting spirit, which is God, which is the only real, true, genuine substance. If anyone thinks that they're going to lose their individuality by recognizing God as the only true source of ourselves, because the Bible states that God is all in all. All with a capital L means the only source there is, and all with a little a means the manifestation of God. And that's exactly what chapter 1 says, that God made man in his image and likeness. That means God is the source. That means man is the manifestation of the source, which is God. Suppose you could separate an image from the source. What would the image be? It would be nebulous. It would be floating out into emptiness, because it doesn't have any source. And what would the source be if there were no manifestation? It couldn't be a source, because a source refers to the fact that there is a manifestation. A beautiful painting could not exist as an image of the thoughts of the painter, the artist, or the photographer, if it's photography of a real landscape. If somebody didn't take the picture couldn't exist. The picture is the interpretation of what the photographer is seeing. If he wants the sunrise, he has to be out there when the sun is coming up, when the sun is rising. The opposite with a sunset. If he's going to take a photograph of an eclipse, he has to be there when it's taking place. God is always omnipresent. There is not a time that God is not omnipresent, because the laws of the universe are God. God is not a person. Otherwise, God could not be omnipresent. The number 7 can be omnipresent because it's an idea. It's not a physical thing. Sure, you can write it down on a piece of paper. You can touch that piece of paper that has an image of a 7 on it. But you don't have to have the paper for the 7 to exist, because the 7 is an idea. It is representing a principle. It's one of the 10 digits, 0 through 9. But those 10 digits, without an algorithm and the operators that put the algorithm into play, reflecting the 10 elements of the 10 digits, wouldn't exist. You couldn't have a product of 1 times 7 equals 7, or 2 times 3 equals 6, or 5 times 20 equaling 100, if you had any part missing. If the digits were missing, if the algorithm were missing, if the operators of add, subtract, multiply, and divide were missing, you couldn't come up with a product. You cannot come up with the reality about yourself if you don't have all of the factors. And that's what we teach in these prayer treatments. We give you the information so that you can prove it for yourself. And by the way, you really cannot teach an adult. You can teach children through a certain number of years because they're very receptive. But adults have experienced a lot of things that are embedded into a so-called brain. And along with that is ego. And it rejects anything that is different than what it has believed to be true. Unless it has gone through a reasoning process where it has exceeded its own resistance. And that's what we do with the system of divine metaphysics. It provides the tools so that one can reason themselves above what has been a false view of everything. Key point number 3. But as material sensation, or a soul in the body, blind mortals do lose sight of spiritual individuality. Material personality is not realism. Professor Albert Einstein, commonly known just by his last name as Einstein, made 2 very significant statements that are about blindness and science and so forth. And he said that science without religion is lame. And religion without science is blind. And that's what happens if we slip into the mistake of thinking that we, as man, and that's a generic term which really means all mankind, except man in most senses are termed the spiritual man and not a material man. So it's the spiritual man and not the human man that is referred to generally when the Bible talks about man. So if we want to not lose sight of spiritual individuality, then we have to stick with the science and forget about theory. We have to stick with the one and only divine mind of God as our mind, because we're reflecting God, and forget all about the definition I read to you about mortal mind. Don't even think about adopting that as your source of intelligence. Because if you do, you are in for a constant barrage of mistakes, a deviation from truth. Mary Baker Eddy gave us three very important statements at the beginning of Science and Health. I mean the very beginning, right after the title pages. The first one are the words of Jesus. And anyone that has been in a Christian Science church has probably seen it on the wall, because it's a very favorite quotation that is cited. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Know means understand. Understand means we have done the research, and we have tested it, and we found it to be true. Whatever truth we're dealing with, we have found it to be true because we did the research, we did the testing, and we proved it for ourselves. We can't just read something, no matter who wrote it, whether it's one of the Bible characters, or Mary Baker Eddy, or some other genius in Christian Science. And there have been a number of them who in 15-minute appointments would heal the complete problem, no matter what it was. We can't just take their word for anything. They didn't take someone else's word. They tested it. They did the research. They convinced themselves that it was truth because of the research they did, not because of something they read. And that's what a wise person does. Einstein said, curiosity exists for a reason. In fact, he said it exists for its own reason. He says, never stop questioning. Never. The second quote is from who Mary Baker Eddy describes as immortal, or at least the words, the immortal wisdom of Shakespeare, she says. And the particular quote that is at the beginning of the textbook, and she quotes him several different places. So this particular quote, as number two at the beginning of the textbook, is, there is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What kind of thinking are we going to do? Are we going to let the mind of God do the thinking? Can you think of a better source? Mind is all intelligence. It's not hard to find that in various ways it's written in the Bible. Oh, so what about truth? It says there is nothing new under the sun. That's in Ecclesiastes. So in other words, Mary Baker Eddy didn't invent anything. Thomas Edison didn't invent anything. Nikola Tesla didn't invent anything. The wealthiest man in the world today did not invent anything. And by the way, Nikola Tesla, who was truly a genius, and walked down the street holding a light bulb with it being lit from the electricity that was inside the ground that he was walking on. He was a true genius. And we could have had free electricity for the last 125 years if it wasn't for us being asleep, like Edmund Burke says, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. If the population of the day would have defended and promoted the genius of Nikola Tesla, the populations of the world would have been gaining free electricity for the last 125 years. Free. totally free. Now, there may have been a little bit of cost to put it in a form that was usable and portable and so forth, but that's minuscule compared to what we've been paying for, because we've not only been paying for making the electricity that they generate in a way that we could use it, which is the same thing I'm talking about with the free energy, but we have to pay for the use and the quantity of energy that we use, which is the lion's share of the bill, the charges that we're paying to whatever electric company we're using. Probably 95% of what we pay for our electric bill would be free. And guess who was good friends with Nikola Tesla? If you're really on the ball, you would know. But probably one out of a million people don't know. Maybe one out of, 4 billion. Only a few people know, even though it's public information. We've had it on our website for a long time. The President of the United States had an uncle named John. In fact, that's the middle name of the president. And John was close friends with Nikola Tesla. And Nikola Tesla preceded the president's uncle by leaving invisible form. And all of his papers were given to the president's uncle. And the president's uncle, when he went around the corner where he wasn't visible anymore, all those papers went to the president of the United States. And that's one of his very important goals, is to utilize that information to provide free energy to the world. And of course, those who like to think that they can be evil and suppress the population from having the good things, they're trying to prevent that from happening. But truth always prevails. If good men don't do nothing but do something, so that evil doesn't triumph. Remember, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. The President of the United States is prophesied in the Bible. He was chosen not because he had no flaws. Jesus was filled with flaws. Who did he choose for his disciples? How many of the 12 were truly loyal to him and really wanted to know the truth? The only one that was exiled to the island of Patmos. The only one that showed up for the crucifixion. The only one that was put into a pot of oil where they tried to kill him and he survived. The one that sat next to Jesus at the Last Supper. And who was on the other side? Mary Magdalene. Yes, Mary Magdalene. The one that had such a colorful past, had been transformed from her colorful past to purity. Totally cleansed. Jesus didn't condemn her, so he didn't have to forgive her. If we think we need to forgive someone, that means we've condemned them. That means we played God. Mary Baker Eddy has an article in Miscellaneous Writings. It says, "Who is thine enemy?" Well, the title is, love your enemies. And she asks the question, who is thine enemy? Is it someone that you're thinking in your thought is an enemy? And obviously that's the answer. They may not even give us another thought. And we're festering over them being an enemy. Francis Fluno was one of Mary Baker Eddy's first lecturers. This would have been back around 1880. Fluno. If you check him out on the website or click under pictures, his picture is there under featured authors. One of the primary buttons where you can just go straight to the author list. Over 100 listed, and they're by alphabetical order. Just click on the F and then click Fluno. And he wrote an article called Criticism. Mary Baker Eddy was so impressed by him having this revelation, and he probably got it from her, but she set aside every hour of the day enough time to do self-examination. She was attacked by everyone, just like Jesus. Everyone hated her. Even the people living in her household did not maintain their loyalty after she went around the corner. No, everyone was a traitor. Every single one. Not a single one showed up to support her. They let all the statues be destroyed that were in her honor. They permitted the picture, her picture, to be taken out of the textbook. The day she passed on, they didn't wait for a weekend to do it either, the board of directors. No, they took her picture out immediately. They did everything they could to get rid of her existence or her memory or the works that she did. They tried to do everything possible to separate her from the discovery. Just like the disciples of Jesus, 11 out of 12 of them were traitors. The entire board of directors were traitors. The entire church, except for very few, were traitors. We have to take a stand. Francis Fluno said about criticism that criticism leads to all evil. Not to one or two or some of them. All evil is sourced in individual criticism. If we're going to criticize someone, we better realize that we're as evil as they come, because that's exactly what the result is when we criticize other people. We're not seeing them as described here in these references that were recited about who man is. No. We are acting the opposite of what this whole plank number 25 talks about man being the perfect image of God. We're not the perfect image of anything that is good if we criticize others. Nope. We're just like the 11 disciples. We're not showing up when we're needed. We ignore things that we should stand for and that we should promote as being the truth. During these elections, did you do anything to try to make sure that the man that is prophesied in the Bible was going to be elected? Did you do anything to make it happen? And when it was proven that the 2020 election was totally a fraud, what did you do about it? Anything? One of our president's dear friends was a long-time attorney, and he became the mayor of New York, and New York had a very solid reputation of corruption, being one of the most corrupt cities that ever existed. The whole police department was corrupt from beginning to end. In fact, they made a movie about it. I watched the movie. Very engaging. The short fella. First name is Al. The last name begins with a P, as in Pacino. It's a movie, so I'm not personalizing it. I'm not personalizing him, nor making him enthroned in my thought. But he played the part of somebody that did not want to go along the common path of becoming corrupt as a policeman. Anyway, Mr. G came along and became the mayor. It might remind you of the name of Giuliani. And he cleaned up the police department. He cleaned up the city. He reduced the crime rate from one of the highest, if not the highest, in the whole U.S. to the lowest, or one of the lowest. I don't remember the exacts about it. Been a while since I've looked at the statistics, but I read the book with great interest by his chief of police. And as happens to good people, the ones that do something about it, they're attacked by all the evil forces that can muster themselves up to attack. And they not only took his law license away, but they bankrupted him and put his case through a corrupt court with a corrupt attorney, a corrupt judge and juries. And they bankrupted him. They gave him a $148 million judgment. Took his home away from him. They raided him at, 4 o'clock in the morning when he and his wife were in bed. They came with everyone, people from the water. I think his house was on the water and land. One of our agencies, which was known as being one of the most corrupt, starts with an F. They did all this without any cause. And yet, the reason all this happened to him was found to be flawed. Because he was stating with facts that the 2020 election was totally fraud. So here we have it. We have people that stand up and do what they should be doing, and they get bankrupted, murdered, whatever seems to be convenient for the people that don't want the truth to come out. So what are we going to do? Are we going to live in fear? Someone has to take a stand, and someone should be the whole population. But no, everybody wants to just point the finger and say, let him do it. I'm scared. You see, people are not brave, courageous, and bold because they are controlled by fear. They make a real big deal out of when they bankrupt somebody or murder them. Well, maybe not murder them. They want that kind of kept under the wraps. So we have to decide what we want to be. I read something just recently that said everything that you give away, you can take with you when you go to another existence. And everything that you've taken, you have to leave behind. Now, there's 1,440 minutes in the day. That's every 24 hours. Doesn't matter when your day starts, 24 hours later, there have been 1,440 minutes that passed by. And you can never recover them. If you don't use them when they're there in front of you, you've lost it. If you work twice as hard tomorrow, you could have done that anyway. You've still lost it. You have one chance to use the moment. Mary Baker Eddy says, what you do with your moments is probably going to determine the success or failure of what your major goals are. What are we going to do with our moments? What are we going to do with our moments? Over in Europe, when things get out of hand, they get millions of people out in the streets. Hundreds of thousands is a small crowd. What do we get here? It's easy to get a million evil people out in the streets. They're paid. They're paid to go out there and protest. But the good people stay home. So this point number three talks about material sensationalism, soul in the body, meaning we're letting a material sense of eyes, ears, you know, feeling, tasting, and smelling control how we identify everything in our life. Whereas spiritual sense is totally different. And we have on our home page everything about both of them. And if not, you can click a link that gets you to a more comprehensive source of information. What are we going to accept as real? Point number three talks all about it. Point number four. It is not the reflection or likeness of spirit, the perfect God. And it's talking about, you know, the material personality. The last phrase of the prior sentence in number three. So it's not the reflection or likeness of spirit. It's not the perfect God that's being reflected. It's referring to sensualism, materialism, a false sense of life, truth, and intelligence being in matter instead of in mind. It says sensualism is not bliss, but bondage. How long does sensual love last? And is it always pleasant and harmonious? Or is it chaos, up and down, good one moment and bad the next? Which one do we want? Do we want to build a foundation on these 32 planks that tell us what it really takes to have a platform that we can stand on that is reliable, that always works, and a system, which is the system of divine metaphysics, that if we will follow it, it always works? Which, what do we want? Do we want stability that lasts forever? Or try to get a quick moment of pleasure that is very fleeting? That's what number four is all about. Do we want the sensualism? It says right here, it's not bliss. So we're not going to get any happiness out of sensualism that is lasting, but bondage. We have an image on our website that says, if you give evil a chance, it will take the reins. You know, and it's a picture of some, you know, Mustang horses out in the open who love freedom and thrive on freedom. And if you choose a horse that is evil, it's going to take control of its own actions. And that's what a belief of evil is, a belief of the devil. When Jesus had his 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, And he was tempted 3 different times by the belief of devil. One of the temptations was to jump off of the top of the temple. And the devil says, God will save you. And he refers to something about, in the Bible, I think it's referred to where it says, God has all power. And Jesus replied, he said, it says in the scriptures, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. Do we want to drive down the road, unless we've got a self-driving car, and take our hands off the wheel and just turn around and talk to the people in the back and just not even look where you're going? If you've got a self-driving car, that is engineered to drive by itself. But one that's not engineered to drive by itself, you better be paying attention to what you're doing. A longtime friend of mine said, think of a vehicle as love. Think of the driver as mind and the road as truth. Contemplate that a moment and you'll see the validity of it. And we should do that with everything in our life. We're driving a vehicle 24/7. And it's called our consciousness. What are we going to do with it? Are we going to do what Genesis chapter 1 verse 26 says? It says, let us make man in our image and our likeness. Our. Who is our? Who is us? Are we going to be in a partnership with the laws of God? We should. Can't think of a better partner than an omnipotent, omnipresent, good God. It says in the Bible we should tithe. And tithe means tenth part. I know people that are very successful financially, can never spend all they have. They worked hard. They were smart with their time. Didn't spend all their time on frivolous activities. They looked at their plans and evaluated how they were doing and what needed to be corrected, and they did it. They think of their partner being God, and they give him his cut first. Not, and see if there's anything left over. They take it out off the top. Now, 10% is really, in the view of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, meant to apply to an average person. Do we want to be average? Were we a C student in school? In college, university, grad school, if we went to grad school, any professional courses that we took in our profession, whatever we're doing, were we just average? If so, then we probably didn't ever get to where we could be considered successful, even in our own measure. So what are we going to do? Well, if you want to go up the ranks, you got to put more effort forth. You got to use more than 10% of your 1,440 minutes a day. You know, that's only, what, a couple hours? 2 hours and 20 minutes a day. 10% of your time to be average. Richard Strain was really in a rut. Working 18 hours a day, home only 6 hours to do everything, sleep, eat dinner, eat breakfast, before he went out the door, take a shower and sleep, shave, whatever. So he finally went to a trusted practitioner, Christian Science practitioner, and he laid it out to her. And he said, what do I do? He came to her looking for guidance and for healing. Probably just to tell her to fix it and he would send a check. He doesn't say that part of it. He's on our website, Strain, S-T-R-A-I-N. And he tells about his experience with the practitioner on the website. And she said, when do you study? That's him talking. Can you hear it? He was silent. He was so ashamed and embarrassed that he didn't want to tell the truth. But he did. He said, I don't have time to study. Then she said one more thing. She said two things. When do you study? And then she said this. If you don't study 5 hours a day, okay, 5 hours out of 24, that's a little over 20%. 4.8 hours would be 20%. So it's a little over 20%. If you don't spend 5 hours a day, you're not going to be able to work out of your problem. So he had to go from doing zero to finding 5 hours somewhere. He didn't know where to even begin to look. That would mean that he couldn't even sleep, because he'd have to eat and get ready for the next day and whatever. Yep, she said 5 hours. He stayed silent for a long, extended period. Finally, he said, okay, I'm going to do it. See, he didn't have any alternative. One of the things we say on our website is you have to come to the realization, you have to make a change in your consciousness if you want to go forward in developing your spiritual nature, or let's say revealing it, because it's already inherent. He reported back later that by the end of one full week, he was able to actually devote 5 hours a day and still get everything else done. Took him a week. And apparently the first night, he didn't get any sleep. Maybe the second night, he got a little bit. By the end of 7 days, he was getting 5 hours. He was devoting 5 hours starting the next day. But he was able to get back up to a more normal sleep time by the end of 1 week. And he ended up becoming a popular speaker on Christian Science. He was not a C student in solving his problem. You might say that he was an A, maybe higher. You pick out the number. What percentage of your time do you need to spend to furthering your knowledge about truth? It has the possibility of changing your life forever. If that's not an incentive, I don't know what is. But you have to do it. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. It was killing him. I'll tell you, one of the most beautiful things about Christian Science is that it is preventative. Preventative. I know of a case where somebody was really enthusiastically pursuing a better understanding of the truth about God and the truth about themselves and everyone around them. And remember, this is only in your own consciousness. You're not trying to meddle in somebody else's affairs. You're not trying to fix their problem. You're only trying to fix your view of everything. Yourself, God, and everyone else, and every event. Remember Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer of Christian Science and divine metaphysics, devoted time every hour of her waking day to do self-examination to make sure she was not criticizing anybody about anything, period. That she was only looking for the good in every activity. And she was attacked by everyone in the church, as was proven when she passed on. Nobody stood up for her. And what used to be 50 churches in the larger cities, you'll be lucky to find two or three out of 50. Why? Remember what I mentioned to you? They destroyed every statue, everything of in her honor. Someone even built a beautiful pyramid to the exact scale of the pyramid of Gaza. I mean, they don't even know when that was built, but it was thousands and thousands of years ago. The Pyramid of Gaza. And it has the finest engineering of the most advanced mathematicians in the world and engineers. And how in the world did they construct it? Did they have some skyhooks to move all that, all of the components around to get it into place? How did they do it? It's got passageways. It's unbelievable. It's supposed to have the prophecies of all the important events which were in there before they happened. A lot of mysteries out there, unless you study them and find out that there's a science behind every single one of them. And that's what Jesus' healings were. There was a science behind every single one of them. And that's exactly what Christian Science is. It's the science of the healings of Jesus, which of course works on for everyone, on any kind of a problem there is. You may want to check out Frederick L. Rawson, R-A-W-S-O-N. He discovered how to heal back in time. Yes, heal back in time. Like that movie, Back to the Future. He was an expert in electricity. People came to him from all over the world, and this was 125 years ago, when there were no jet airplanes that we know about. There was no international telephone. They had to get to where he was no matter what they had to do, whether it was by horse or train or boat, ship, walking. Might take him a month to get there. He was in the UK. Very interesting individual, and he was a true genius. Check out his book, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. It gives you the formula to heal 1,315 ailments. Tells you how to do it. And it's all based on what's in Science and Health. Except that he did prayers for himself to have the solutions be revealed to him. But the principle of everything is in Science and Health, and the method of healing is exactly what Mary Baker Eddy tells us. She says you have to find the name of the problem. And I know that there are a few people that have been in a situation spiritually where they didn't have to do that or couldn't do it, and the healing was done. Wentworth Winslow is one of them. We have it all on the website. If you want confidence on whether or not this works or not, read the last 101 pages of this textbook. It's with a title of Fruitage, which means testimonies. 85 people gave testimonies on 486 healings. Each one of them averaged just under six apiece. They probably had one healing they were trying to bring forth, and it healed all the other problems they had that they weren't even thinking of at the time. They got so involved in studying and learning about what the textbook was giving them in truth that they forgot all about all these other problems. And most of them forgot about the problem that was the problem they were trying to solve. For example, somebody that had poor eyesight, sometime later, after they were healed, they would realize that, gee, I haven't been wearing my glasses. And yet I have perfect vision. And that's how it happens. If we're going to dwell on the problem, we can't ever find the solution. Einstein tells us, you cannot solve a problem on the same level as where the problem was discovered. Why have I mentioned him several times? He had a friend, his last name was Underwood, also a PhD, and he was chosen to be one of the ones on the Atomic Energy Commission during the World War II time frame. They were trying to study how to blow up the world, and they did. Blew up Japan, part of it. And everybody on that commission that invented the atom bomb, except him, passed on from radiation. And when Einstein asked his good friend, Dr. Underwood, how did you survive? All the other people were gone. He said, I'm a student of the writings of Mary Baker Eddy and the science that she discovered. And apparently he practiced it scientifically and systematically, just like he would his profession in nuclear energy. Because Einstein also made the statement that Christian Science is effective in healing if you approach it from a scientific and systematic procedure. It's true of every science. And this is the most advanced science that exists, because it's based on spirit and not matter. Mathematics is not based on matter. It's generic. Apply it in any way you can. The system of divine metaphysics uses mathematics completely for its structure. How many synonymous terms are there about God? There's 7. How many operators? There's 4. What is an algorithm? It's applying the elements of the 7 synonymous terms, utilizing the operators to come up with a product, which is the healing. Mathematics is used in music. That's not based on matter. Anything that is not based on matter is very spiritual in concept. One of the greatest pianists of all time was Vladimir Ashkenazy, a Russian, where many of the greatest people of many professions came from. And he attained such a degree of perfection that he was considered one of the best, if not the best, pianist that ever existed. And during one of his performances, you know, he provided a Q&A period, let people from the audience ask questions. And a staunch critic of musicians said this: how is it that performance after performance, you deliver an absolutely perfect performance? I can't find any kind of mistake. How can you do it time after time after time? As a matter of fact, one of the comments made about him is that he would have conversation with the audience as he was playing the piano and doing the perfect performance. He would have conversation with his audience about the composition that he was playing. He would say, now listen carefully, you're going to hear the sound of a running stream. I wasn't around, but I certainly did listen to his many performances that are available on the internet. And I remember that one in particular. He said, I practice, practice, practice until the music plays me. That was his answer. he got himself totally out of the picture. And it was the music playing him. It was the perfection of God utilizing the receptive thought to deliver the flawless nature of spirit. I mentioned that prevention was one of the greatest things about Christian Science. And the couple of instances that I know about, well, more than a couple, but I'll relate a couple of them to you. Someone was very difficult to make contact with. And they had a need to make contact with him. And they had been emphasizing the value of being disciplined in your schedule, not wasting time, and devoting the best hours of the day on the most important primary project, and not a lot of little things getting ready to do it. And after he got a better understanding of this and the nature of principle and infinite progression of concrete being and, time management, he met the guy on the street. He didn't even try to call him. He was thinking about something totally different. It's like Mary Baker Eddy when she published her first book in 1875. The publisher just didn't publish the book. He had the transcripts, and just nothing was happening. And it finally came to her that she had to write the chapter number 5 on animal magnetism. And so the thoughts came to her about what to put in that chapter. She realized that that book was not complete without that chapter. And basically, animal magnetism is the term that was used in those days to replace the word evil. It meant all evil. Any shape or form. Evil. And of course, she changed the title later to Animal Magnetism Unmasked. Because evil works in deception, utilizing decoys and so forth. And it grows the best like a mushroom when it's covered up. When you put sunlight on a swamp, boy, it dries up. And that's what you have to do with evil. You have to expose it. And that's what Animal Magnetism Unmasked refers to. Exposing the evil. Because that's the best way to destroy it. And you have to discover it, expose it, and then whatever is left over that it doesn't destroy itself of, you clean it up. And then you can go forward with the healing. So that's what we have to do. He got his thought off of how difficult it was to call the guy, and he focused on making his schedule efficient, thinking in a balanced way. Is your schedule balanced? I know people that are total workaholics. They totally ignore everything else in their life, their family, their children, friends, whatever. And it's all work. All work, 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 all the time. That's not principle. That's not balance. Like Richard Strain, he was getting nowhere fast. You find that things work together automatically as opposed to having the normal material sense of life where you've got to work very hard on one thing to get it done or maybe to make contact with somebody or to get a deal done that you've been working on or whatever. These things unfold in a natural, harmonious way, and you have to let it happen. You can't be focusing on the problem because then it doesn't get solved. You will find little things, like I just mentioned, happen in total synchronization. Total synchronization. Point number four. It is not the reflection or likeness of spirit, the perfect God. Sensualism is not... Oh, I'm sorry. We already did this. Okay, number five. For true happiness, man must harmonize with his principal, divine love. And we just covered that. Just covered that. We have to become in line with the laws of God. God gives us the chalkboard. Of course, now we use computers. And he gives us the chalk. But we have to work out the problem. We have to work out the solution. We have the tools. Thanks to Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy. Jesus showed us that it could be done. He showed us that we could raise ourselves from the dead. And we could help other people in whatever their problem was, including raising, being raised from the dead. No matter what the problem was, it could be solved through the system of divine metaphysics. And Mary Baker Eddy is showing us the science so we can do it in a methodical, scientific way. Okay, the four operators. Let me tell you those quickly. It's on the home page. Very easy. Just look down the left column. Tells you all about it. But the four operators are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word means all the facts about God. The Christ means translating, just like Jesus did, from what is the material picture to the truth about the individual or the event. We're replacing a false view with the spiritual view. Christianity is demonstrating that we understand the first part and the second part so that we can bring forth a healing. That's demonstration. Christianity is demonstrating the truth about the situation. And the fourth one is science, and that's where Jesus, the level Jesus was to when he ascended. He had total control and had risen above the material sense of life, truth, and intelligence and matter. He got totally rid of that, replaced it with the spiritual sense. The scientific statement of being in part says there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. That's where Jesus was. He told his disciples not to touch him when he was ready to ascend because he had overcome the belief. He had a short probationary period after he was resurrected, and during that probationary period, he was preparing for ascension, getting rid of every aspect of a belief in material life, truth, and intelligence and matter. He could have escaped the crucifixion, but he went through it, taking all the human suffering that everyone else would do and be involved in, to prove that when you pass on, you don't change the body at all. You know, Thomas had to put his hand in the side where he'd been gashed with a sword. I guess that's what was the deal. He had to put his hand in there to make sure, yeah, this is Jesus. He got the same gash here. He had the same prints on his hand, the nail prints, where they nailed him to the cross. And what do almost every church have in their auditorium? An image of Jesus, you know, a symbol, you know, whatever it's made out of, you know, makes supposedly look, supposed to look real, like Jesus hanging there on the cross. I mean, he raised himself from the dead, or his understanding of truth did. He ascended, and then he came back and dictated the book of Revelation to John. So he had total control over life, truth, and intelligence, the belief that it was in matter. And what did all the churches remember him by? Being crucified. They're all traitors. Just like the 11 that didn't show up. They all believed that he was a failure. Is that the way we're going to think about Jesus? Is that the way we're going to think about Jesus? He went through pure Hades. Everyone attacking him. When he would have a healing, he would have to slip out the back door because there was so much antagonism against him. There's three movies that we recommend. The first one I mentioned has got some rough language, so you have to overlook it, but there's a wonderful message in it. It's called Stand and Deliver. Another one is Pay It Forward. Another one is Remember the Goal. There are great messages. The last two are Christian movies because I don't think there's a word of swearing in either one. I know there isn't in the Remember the Goal. And I don't think there's any in Pay It Forward. So those are definitely a much better writer. Anyone that uses foul language, they don't have to. They can use a substitute word that still gets the message across. And that's only mortal mind that is controlling, you know, the movie to be able to try to bring down the morals of the people watching it. So if we want true happiness, we must harmonize with principle and love. And what is love? It's giving. G-I-V-I-N-G, giving, giving, giving. And we highly recommend you do not give to these large non-profit organizations. UNICEF, U-N-I-C-E-F, is right now having big ads about, they show very pathetic looking children that are starving to death. You can tell by just looking at them and how frail and thin they are. They're not getting enough food to survive. And so you just want to pour your heart out to them and give them every penny you can. Well, that's a mistake. The wealthiest man in the world, who I mentioned before and everybody knows who he is, he started a department called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. And it was digging into where all the money goes that goes to the government, the U.S. government I'm talking about. And they found that the nonprofit organizations, because one of them is called USAID, and a lot of the tax dollars that go into the U.S. government goes to USAID. It's a money laundering operation. Money laundering operation. They found that something like 95% of all the people that are elected officials are bribed. So they pass everything they can to fund these nonprofit organizations under the facade that it is doing good for what the advertisement is, but in fact, they're a money laundering operation. So forget it. They found that somewhere between 0 and 5% of the money they receive actually goes to the purpose of the organization, and the other 95 to 100% is eaten up by fees and payments under the table to everybody that's involved in promoting it. And that includes our Congress and Senate. Pathetic. So don't give them a dime. Not a dime. You have to work hard to give away money. Andrew Carnegie. He sold his company that was ended up being called U.S. Steel. Back about 125 years ago or so, for $350 million. I believe that's the number. He spent the rest of his life giving it away. Not giving the money away, but giving something that was needed. And he focused on education. He built one university called the Andrew Carnegie University. He built buildings in other universities. He built libraries all over the northeast of the U.S. and in the U.K., which was his place he came from. I think it was Ireland, Scotland, I don't know, some of that area. I don't think it was in London. But the one thing he wanted was recognition. So he gave the money away, or the bulk of it, but he had his name on everything. So we have to watch about ego. If there's any way we can do it anonymously, do it. Obviously, people living on the street, you can do it anonymously. You know, homeless people. I know someone that was approached by someone when they came out of a department store and they were begging for money. He was dressed okay, looked like a man ready to go to work. And so he asked him, well, why do you want money? Why don't you have money? Why are you begging for money for food? He said, I lost my job. I haven't eaten in 2 days. I don't even have money to put in my motorcycle to follow up on any ads that are in the paper. Don't have money even for public transportation. He said, what do? I'm a handyman. I love doing it, and I can fix almost anything you can imagine. The guy said, you know what? He said, I've been accumulating a list of things I need done at the house. And so they ended up going to a gas station and getting gas for his vehicle. Took him up to his house, showed him the list. He worked for him for 3 months, fixing everything on the list. Everything. It included everything you can think of. Electrical, even a microwave that needed fixed. It wasn't working. The guy was very creative, very good, very reasonable. And he had a full-time job to go to as soon as he got done with the list. I know another circumstance where somebody came out of a popular store, the largest retailer in the world, you know who it is, and there was somebody, a mother with her daughter there that was probably in her 20s, in a wheelchair, and she had absolutely no control over her body. She didn't even know where she was. She couldn't talk. She couldn't see. It was very, very sad. And they did not speak the same language. He said, how can I be of help to these people? I can't communicate with them because they don't speak English. So the thought came to him to give them a generous financial donation on the spot. And then he printed out different chapters of Science and Health in their language. And he started by giving them a couple of chapters. It was the preface and the chapter 18 on fruitage, showing the healing. And her problem, the daughter's problem, probably was listed there. I don't even know what the name of the problem would be. When me and the rest of the kids in our family, there were 4 of us, went to school, we were all raised in a Christian Science Sunday school, and we were exempted from taking any classes on diseases and the body and medicine and all that kind of stuff. So I don't even know what this would be called, but it was certainly not a pleasant thing to see, and you knew it was a very severe situation, and the mother had to be a real trooper to do what she did, to sit there asking for donations and taking care of her daughter. I mean, it had to be a real trooper that would be able to deal with all that. And when he went back, after giving her the book the next time he went, and then the next time he went back after that, she had a smile from ear to ear. She appreciated it so much, because most people would give her a very minuscule amount of donation and then just go on. But he took time to to communicate with her, even though it was, you know, through something in her language that he himself couldn't read. But he knew what was in the book because he was a student of Christian Science and studied it in English. He knew what it was and what it was capable of because he had been a Christian Scientist all of his life. Mary Becquerel asked one of her students, if you walk down the street and you see a stray dog, or you see an accident, or you see somebody in a wheelchair, I believe those are the three examples that she gave. She said, what do you do? He was just like Richard Strain. He was silent because he was ashamed. Because the next thing she said, because he wasn't talking or admitting that he did nothing, she said, are you a Christian Scientist? Well, she had boxed him in a corner. He said, no, Mrs. Eddy, I'm not. He knew what he had to do, what he should have been doing, but he was like Edmund Burke said, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. Are we going to be doing nothing? Or are we going to get a fire underneath our what we sit on and do something about it? That's what we should be doing. The next point, number six, the Son must be in accord with the Father, in conformity with Christ. Well, we've been talking about that in a lot of different ways here. We can all be sons and daughters of God by reflecting the image of God. We're supposed to have learned from our human father and mother and let the good part rub on and be a guide to us. And that's what being the image and likeness of God is all about. Point number seven, according to divine science, man is in a degree as perfect as the mind that forms him. That's infinite progression as concrete being. Are we uncovering enough of understanding about divine science to be striving for perfection? Are we striving to improve? Are we doing what Mary Baker Eddy did and check through self-examination? How are we doing today? What are we doing? Are we correcting things that we did wrong? Are we thinking better about someone that we weren't thinking so good about? Are we taking actions that are more constructive than just being frivolous with our time? Are we sleeping 8 or 10 hours a day? Or are we expressing more life and sleeping less? Life is not being asleep. Life is being awake. Key point number eight is the final one. The truth of being makes man harmonious and immortal, while error is mortal and discordant. Well, we've been discussing that throughout the whole session. By the way, I didn't give you the third quote at the beginning of the textbook, and it's by Mary Baker Eddy. It says, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere. So who is thou? Oh, that's God. It's a capital T. Thou hast heard my prayer. Does God have ears? We read the definition of God and it says that God is incorporeal. He is not anthropomorphic. And therefore we are not. Remember it said that man is not made up of blood, bones, and material elements, all that kind of stuff. We are the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind, the compound idea of infinite spirit. That's who we are. Are we going to act like it? Are we going to use a theory of mortal mind, of being our real mind? Are we going to rely on a mortal brain instead of the divine intelligence of God? Are we going to examine everything we think, say, and do to make sure it's in line with spirit instead of matter? In line with the golden rule of giving instead of taking? Are we going to be alert when we're walking down the street or going on an errand or whatever we're doing? And be alert to people that may be in need? If we see an accident, are we going to apply the truth to it in our own consciousness, which will also affect everybody in the so-called accident? Treat it generically. In fact, that's what the scientific statement is. Scientific statement of being. You can utilize that scientific statement of being by substituting the word matter for whatever the problem is, and the word man by including you, by saying, I'm an individual manifestation of man, therefore I am spiritual. I am not material. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in whatever the name of the problem is. I shall close by reciting the scientific statement of being. We've toyed around with it, but let me state it in its completeness, and you can get an idea of what I mean by substituting words so that it can apply to a particular situation. By the way, before I do that, there's one other one that had 15-minute appointments. So I mentioned Frederick L. Rawson. Wentworth Winslow also had 15-minute appointments. And Joe Goldsmith. By the end of 15 minutes, the people were healed. Joe Goldsmith walked into a Christian Science nursing home, and everybody in there had a contagious disease, the same contagious disease. He was called in there by somebody that was under that belief. And when he showed up, the receptionist said, you can't go in there because everybody's got this contagious disease. If you go in there, you're going to come out with it. Boy, that's the wrong kind of person to be a receptionist in a Christian Science nursing home. But anyway, he went over and sat down in a quiet area and did his work to clear his own thought. And he said, you know, you only have one problem here. Apparently, they had several floors of people. You only have one problem. You don't have however many hundred people that are in this building. You don't have that many problems. You have one. And just listening to what the words are in this scientific statement of being, you'll be able to figure out what it is. If you have any question about this treatment or anything on the website or anything about Christian Science, you're welcome to communicate with us. Just go to the contact form, and it tells you exactly what to do. Here is the scientific statement of being, and if I have any lingering thoughts, I'll mention it right after this closing prayer. So if you wait until the recording is totally done, then you will have gleaned everything there is at the moment. This is from page 468 in the chapter on recapitulation, and the question is simply, what is the scientific statement of being? There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. It is January 22, 2026, the first month of the new year, and it is 14:43 on the 24-hour clock. The title to this prayer treatment is Plank 25 of 32. Man reflects the perfect God. Thank you for listening. The end.